Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
Welcome to Alive to Thrive. That was Power of Love by Huey Lewis, a fantastic, fun song to start off the weekend. And I am so excited for our guest today, Annette Valancourt, PhD. I originally met about 3 or 4 years ago when I first got on internet radio with iWatch Radio. Annette came to my launch party, and it was so much fun. We just instantly connected. She is a master manifester. She's an author, and she's known as the elite soulmate coach. But the best thing about Annette is that she's a real person. She's just very genuine and warm. And, you know, you can tell the people that have worked on their own spiritual path for a number of years, they're, you know, she just exudes love in everything she does. But she does have a PhD in counseling psychology and is soon to test for her black belt in Shotokan karate. So welcome, Annette. How you doing?
Hi, Brenda. Thanks. And thanks for having me on the show. I'm great.
Good. Well, I you know, there's so many different things we need to talk about. I definitely want to talk about your love and practice of karate, because I think that's a spiritual practice. And then, of course, your professional work as a couples counselor. And starting with your book, How to Manifest Your Soulmate with EFT, you open the book with a Buddhist quote, and I want to read it because it's so beautiful, or some of it. And it says, "May I be filled with loving kindness. May I be safe from inner and outer dangers. And may I be well in body and mind. And may I be at ease and happy." And that really could be the mantra or the theme for Alive to Thrive. That's what we talk about on this show. And wanted to ask you how Buddhism has had a role in your spiritual development.
Oh, thank you. Great question. I first became aware of Buddhism, specifically Zen Buddhism, when I was in college, back when the dinosaurs walked the earth. And one of the major tenets of Buddhism is that life has suffering and that there's an end to suffering. So in my role as a psychotherapist for 24 years and now as the elite soulmate coach, all those things apply the end of suffering to the work that I do. You probably have heard the expression that about love and fear, you know, Marianne Williamson stuff, that every mm-hmm. time there's a fearful action, it's a cry for love, and everywhere there's fear, you know, it's an attempt to be loving. And so Buddhist practice really informs my work in a lot of ways in terms of helping people detach from suffering. Pain happens, so, suffering is optional.
So which came first, your spiritual path or your professional studies in psychology?
I would say my spiritual path. Someone asked me, you know, really when I started on the path, and I said, I think in the womb. It's just been an innate part of my nature. If you know the Myers-Briggs personality type, I'm an INFP, which is a natural healer, and we tend to be psychologists and ministers and musicians and people who are artistic and spiritual.
That's funny because I think I'm the same one. In fact, when I was a child, some psychic person I met, I didn't even know anything about anything. I was about 8 or 9 years old, and he told me I should be a counselor. And, you know, I never, it always puzzled me all my life because I had a sister who was a social worker. But, you know, in doing fundraising, I was like a counselor because I was listening to people tell me their pain and their stories about, you know, if they had alcoholism in the family or if they had domestic violence in their past or, you know, whatever hurtful trauma that had happened to them. And by sharing that story, they ultimately would give money to the charity I worked with. But it was being very much of a therapist and getting helping people to open up. So you were – tell us about childhood. What were some of the early influences? I mean, you were raised in a very large family – 9 children. Mm-hmm. Your mother worked very hard to juggle all that. And what were some of the lessons, good and bad, or just, you know, eye-opening things that you saw in your mother trying to care for all these children?
Well, I think the strongest message I took away from my mom is how to be organized. Because with, good Lord, with 9 children, you had to be organized or you'd have chaos all the time. And so it was one of those things where we had chores, age-appropriate chores when we were kids, you know, about cleaning our own room and then helping clean the house and things that, you know, we could do, like when we're 5, we could dust or make an attempt to dust. And as we got older, helping out with dishes and laundry and that sort of thing and just kind of managing the household. But one of the things I think was a real profound influence on me was that I was 12 when my youngest brother was born. And by then, you can imagine, my mom was pretty tired. So I spent a lot of time caretaking for the younger children. I was the third of the 9 and the oldest daughter, so I kind of considered myself mom junior. And one of the impacts of that, you know, some people say positive, some people say negative. I tend to see it as just part of who I am, is that I became a nurturer, but I didn't have any interest in having children because I felt like I already raised mine. So it put me on a path of, you know, finding a way to nurture and use these skills in a wider context.
Mm-hmm. And I, similar but different in that my sister had 9 and my other sister had 6 and my other sister had 4, my other brother had 3, and there were so many kids by the time I came along. I was the youngest of 6. I said, you know, there's already plenty of kids in this family. Why do I want to bring, you know, and I did. I saw my sister, the one that had the 9, never being able to travel and really being, you know, having to be very organized, like you said, but just not really being able to do some of the things she loved to do until later in life. And and I think, you know, we have all kinds of lessons that come to us when we're growing up. And coming from a big family, though, you do learn how to juggle different personalities and be able to share and to be able to have more of a cooperative approach to life. So you went off to college, and, you know, what was that like? I mean, you were breaking the tradition of some sort by going off and finding.
My dad had an 8th grade education. My mom had a year of nursing school before she got married and started having children. And the expectation to go to college didn't exist in my family. But from being a little girl, I somehow knew I wanted to get a PhD. How I knew what a PhD was, I have no idea.
Wow.
You know, and I knew early on that I wanted to be some sort of a counselor or a priest. But I was Catholic, and Catholics don't allow women to be priests. So I also went through a phase, a very serious phase in my early 20s, probably about from the age of 13 to 23, looking into becoming a nun because I thought I had a religious vocation. Turns out I had a spiritual vocation, but not a religious vocation, which is a difference. So I decided to follow this inner impulse, the still small voice within, if you will, and go to college, even though I had to put myself through, pay for every cent of it myself. So it took a while. But there was this determination that came from somewhere else. It didn't come from any outside expectations. It didn't come from, you know, my teachers saying, oh, of course you're going to go to college. It certainly didn't come from my family who said, you know, we can't afford it or what's college, that sort of thing. And I just continued to follow that path. People, sometimes people would say, oh, well, that was easy for you. Well, no, it really wasn't. But I didn't, you know, whine and bemoan the sacrifices that I had to make. It was just something I did because it was who I was. And I think that's an important message about spirituality, is being able to listen to the still small voice within and discern that it's in the highest and best good of everyone, and then have the courage to follow it.
Wow, and that is part of the steps you talk about in terms of becoming a soulmate, sort of being ready for relationship. And I want to talk about that in a broad sense because I think it's relationship with others in general. It's not just relationship in the traditional sense. People think, you know, they need a partner or a spouse for completion, but it's really completion within. And to be a soulmate doesn't mean you may ever be in a married relationship. It may be that you are evolved. And so I think this is a new translation that we're going to explore here today, that that you kind of, you know, really blow the cover off on all this, that, you know, what is being a soulmate. So, but you talk about just being love, and that when you are focused on coming from a place of love, being in love with your own life, that then you can attract more into your life, whether it's a partner, whether it's an ideal job. I mean, you have had incredible success at manifesting financial abundance. You lost a lot of weight. I mean, and then, you know, selling a house by yourself, which is, to me, that's just amazing. I've never done that. I only just recently had real estate in my name in the last, say, 7 years, but being, you know, doing that and then doubling your income during the recession. These are all examples of how when someone does work on their inside out first, how abundance does show up. And so let's talk about a little bit of that. So, you know, how did you start applying your own principles to your life where you were manifesting some outward success?
Okay. Well, in my career, let's start there, I had reached a level of income and success that seemed I couldn't get above. And one of the things that I noticed is I had this deprivation mindset. In other words, I had a lot of fear around issues of money, issues of financial security, lots of fears about the future, that sort of thing. And one day I just decided that this was not helpful. And I started to begin with a vision of what it is I wanted, and I wanted to manifest at least a six-figure income. And I just made a commitment to do that. So the first two steps in manifestation were happening right there, which is clarity about the goal that you want and then an unfailing commitment to having it and creating it. And I think along with that commitment was the realization that I would take whatever steps were necessary in order to make that happen. And there's a quote, I think it's Goethe, that talks about, you know, when you I'm paraphrasing, but when you form a vision or a goal, the universe falls all over itself to help you. And that's what started to happen. Yeah, it's kind of the law of attraction. It's when you have that clarity and you have that commitment in any kind of goal, whether it's financial or your love life, then things start to happen synchronistically, and that's what started to happen in my life. And I realized that once I broke that six-figure income barrier, how easy it was. It didn't look easy from the deprivation mindset, but when you have an abundant mindset and you understand that when you're in alignment with a vision of service, particularly it's not like a vision of a dollar figure, but a vision of service, that you attract the people to you that can provide that that kind of income as a result of your
service. And some of these things are kind of laid out in great detail in the Think and Grow Rich book, Napoleon Hill,
yes.
which I'm sure you've read,
and is
one of my favorite books. But what are some of the books and speakers that have influenced you on this path?
Oh, my gosh. Joseph Campbell. Back in college, I read A Hero with a Thousand Faces and really began to see the path of transformation and how it's not for everybody. The many are called, few are chosen kind of thing, that there's peril along the way, and that, but once you sort of call out for divine helpers, as he calls them, they'll come. Yeah, so that was certainly one. His Power of Myth series with Bill Moyers was another. Let me think. Yeah, you mentioned Napoleon Hill. Jack Canfield has a book called The Success Principles, where mm-hmm. he gives very practical steps of things to do to move you along the path of success. And he, again, is usually applying it to financial abundance. And that's part of the reason I wrote the book that I did, is everybody was talking about abundance and finances, but nobody was going into great detail about how to apply these principles to your love life. So I felt like there was a gap in the market.
Mm-hmm. And so do you think that there is a value judgment in society that to be in a relationship is somehow more significant, more valuable than being a successful single woman?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And
when I was in my 20s and I was unmarried, people would say, oh, well, you just haven't met the right person yet. And mm-hmm. now that I'm much older than that, and people will say, well, you're lucky you've bypassed a couple of divorces. You know, so there's a lot of pressure when we're young, especially, to be coupled up.
Mm-hmm.
And people think you're somehow less than. They don't see the value in being a single person. A lot of single people don't either, which is why they...
Well, I think it depends on where you live, because I spent 14 years in Washington, D.C., and there were a lot of women that were career-driven. I mean, I was myself for mm-hmm. 20, 30 years. I mean, that was my priority, and I mm-hmm. don't feel I missed out on having
yeah.
kids. I've been a mentor to children. I've been a tutor. I've been involved in kids. I think there are different paths for different people, and
absolutely.
We all can nurture each other, and we all can serve in a maternal role to other people without
mm-hmm.
having to go through childbirth. And I don't think it's a bad thing to say, hey, you know what? I choose not to have children. I choose to do other things to give to the world, be of service in other ways. But I think there is, you know, less so now than there used to be, but still in certain parts of the country, of course, still in the Midwest
mm-hmm.
and in the South, you know, for a woman to articulate that, you know, there is maybe a value judgment there. But
mm-hmm.
to become you make the point. You know, being an evolved spiritual being is not just for the end result of finding the perfect mate. It's so that you are looking, you're fulfilled inside first, and then once you're doing all the things you love and you're living your life full out and not looking for someone to rescue you, then the perfect person actually does show up, because
mm-hmm.
they're attracted to all those things you love doing, because you're living your authentic life, and then they're hopefully more whole and complete. But we know that doesn't always happen. A lot of times people,
right.
and I wanted to ask you about that, because I was talking to someone, and they said, you know, they felt that their spouse was someone who rescued them. And they've been with this spouse for many, many years. But she said, you know, I don't think either one of us are in love with each other. But we love each other, and we would be there by our bedside through thick or thin. But I'm not sure I would choose him now. So what do you think about that? Relationships change over time. I mean, you go through that romantic phase where everything is roses and the person can do no wrong because they're showing up only, they're only showing you their good side. And
right.
then you live with them. And then, you know, then all the past baggage comes bubbling up. So
right.
what do you say? I think this person is actually still in a loving relationship, but they have gotten to a place maybe where they've taken each other for granted. So what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I think we're infatuated with infatuation.
Yeah.
That we think that the infatuation stage is the only stage of love that's valuable or most important, and that when that fades, that A, it's never coming back, and B, suddenly, you know, you decide you're with the wrong person. When your stuff hits the fan, when all the shadow aspects of yourself hit the fan, it's a sign that you are in an intimate relationship that's working at least at a soul level, because the purpose of soulmates is to bring that stuff to the surface so it can be healed and you can get all that stuff out of the way so you become a wider channel or a clearer channel for love to come through you. So it's not, you know, I say it's both the boon and the bane of intimate relationships to have that stuff happen, but it's inevitable after the infatuation stage wears off.
So many of my friends, I see two things happening. Generally, they're the communicator and their spouse isn't. And so
mm-hmm.
they'll suggest a book and the spouse won't read it. They'll suggest
yeah.
counseling and the spouse doesn't want to go. And so,
uh-huh.
And then you hear, you know, women say, well, I'm doing all the work. They're not doing anything. I'm out, you know. And eventually, well, some women will leave and then that will go end in divorce. And then some will stay, but they'll just kind of, you know, go off and do their own life within the context
mm-hmm.
of that marriage. So
mm-hmm.
what do you say or when you work with a woman who's in that situation, she wants to reinvent the love in her current marriage. They've been married a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
Things have gotten stale. They have, you know, bed death, as Dr. Oz calls it.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do when you work with someone like that, and where do you start?
Well, it's a real common problem, especially the part you said that when the woman is saying, you know, I'm doing all the work. I'll say, well, stop it. And what I mean by that, when they're saying, you know, my spouse, my partner doesn't talk, and I see this over and over again, is, and it's usually the woman, unfortunately, she'll ask the partner, husband, a question, and then she'll answer it for him. So she doesn't give an opportunity for him to talk. Or the other thing that I see happen is she'll ask him a question, and then when he does give an honest answer, she'll criticize him, or she'll say, that's not what you really mean. And so it's pointless. And there's unconscious ways that we close down the other person, shut them down. So when the other person doesn't feel like they can be open and authentic and sharing of their feeling, yeah, the sizzle goes out of the relationship. And the romance never returns because one person is shut down and the other partner doesn't realize how unconsciously they're shutting that other person down. So that's part of it. What was the second half of your question?
Well, do you work with both individual women and couples, or
yes.
do you work just with one person? So you do with
no,
work with couples.
I do work with couples,
so
yes.
Tell mm-hmm. us the work you do as an elite soulmate coach.
Well, as an elite soulmate coach, I'm mainly working with singles that are looking to manifest their soulmate. But, you know, one of the things I'm hearing from my readers is that they're in a committed relationship, they're married, and they are wanting to buy the books used to deepen their relationship. They want to see if they can turn their mate into their soulmate and have a different perspective. So when I'm working with singles, and it's the same thing, I think, with couples, is I ask each of the person to do their individual inner work to clear all those barriers, fears, projections, blocking beliefs, and thought biography. And what I mean by that is maybe past trauma and stuff like that, so that they can be more available for the love and the connection. When you're in a really loving, open-hearted place, it's amazing. And this may be what was happening to you, Brenda, where people were talking, you know, sharing open, you know, openly with you about their lives because you're an open-hearted person. People sense that, like dogs and children know who are good to, you know, talk to, and so do people who are hurt, if they can sense that you're open-hearted. So that's really the goal of my work. But part of the goal of my work is just to help people get in deep connection with the essence of who they are, which is love, by clearing all the barriers and blocks to it.
Okay. And so how does someone have transformation in going from being stuck in old patterns to living more in their place of desire? So in a relationship that's been a long-term marriage, for example, how do they change those old patterns?
Well, the technique that I teach in the book, and there's many ways, but the technique that I have found over the 24 years I've been doing this that is the easiest to learn and the simplest is called EFT, which stands for Emotional Freedom Technique, and it's a form of tapping on various meridian points on your hands and face that allows you to clear those fears or change self-limiting beliefs. So if you have a limiting belief that says, I'm not attractive, you're going to act in a way that confirms that. So if you can, or when you change, not if, but when you change that belief to I'm attractive and I feel good about myself and I like my body or whatever it is, you're going to start living and acting on that belief. And people around you cannot help but change how they respond to you because you're showing up differently in the environment.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And so it's always that line that you can't change the other person, but you can change yourself. And so when you change
Absolutely.
Yourself and you start, you know, doing the EFT and you start positive affirmations and things start shifting within you, then that other person is going to be attracted to that new person.
Yeah.
That is
I use the metaphor that being in a relationship is like being in a dance. And if you want to do the tango and your partner is doing the cha-cha, you know, and you're going along with the cha-cha, you just need to start doing the tango and they'll come along. It's amazing how people's behavior shifts in response to your internal changes that manifest as a change in behavior. And they go, oh, my God, you know, we can't do the same old anymore because you're different.
I get it. That's so perfect. And so, you know, I love one of the quotes that says, your soulmate doesn't live in your comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
So it so made me laugh because in so many ways, I mean, because I made my list of my perfect person. I was introduced to metaphysics in Colorado in 2004. They were talking about the 12 conditions of a miracle. The author of that book was at the Mile High Church. And, you know, so I made this list, but I forgot to put on the list. I always joke that the person should be in Colorado. I did not put a geographic location. And, you know, that was okay because when the person did show up, it was like, you know what, having survived a car crash doesn't matter to me where the person lives. They could live in, you know, halfway across the globe because you know it. When it shows up, you know it. And you say, this is it. This is what I asked the universe for. Here it is. And but it is sometimes outside your comfort zone and some things have to change, especially for let's just say with women, if you're living in your own space, your own independence, or men, you know, I think with a lot of men, they're afraid they're going to lose their sense of freedom, their sense of independence. Because sometimes people think of going into relationship with another person, you're going to merge, but you're not merging. It's like that beautiful Gibran quote. Jabril Gibran that says to be the two strings on a lute, be parallel. You know, it's to be parallel, not to be all entwined in knots. But but let's talk about that outside your comfort zone. What did you mean by that when you wrote that?
Well, a lot of people come to my classes and they'll say, I brought my list, kind of like what you were describing. I want somebody who's like this and like this and like this. And then I think, are you even moving in the world in a way where you're going to encounter that person and say, oh, I want somebody who's fit and active. And I go, well, how often do you go to the gym? Oh, I never go to the gym. It's like, oh, how are you going to run into this person? Or I want someone who's, you know, makes a lot of money. It's like, well, are you moving in those circles? Well, no. Well, how are you going to, you know, so if you want somebody at a certain caliber or in a certain part of the country or whatever, you have to be moving in those circles. And to shift from where you are to, you know, being a regular at the gym or moving in certain kinds of social circles or whatever does take you outside of your comfort zone, and that's where your fear stops you, you know, for the most part. And that's why EFT is wonderful, kind of as an eraser of those emotional fears.
Mm-hmm.
If your soulmate was in your comfort zone, you'd already have met them.
Mm-hmm. And that is such a great point, to get out of your comfort zone and start going to different places. And I tell people all the time to volunteer, because when I hear women complain there are no good men, I'm like, go volunteer at a place you love. Because guess what? When you meet a guy and he's volunteering there, you're going to have so much in common. First of all, you're going to both love that cause that you're both volunteering
mm-hmm.
for. And how cool is that, to have someone that cares about the same issue and is in service to others? But that's true. You have to do the things, if it's the arts or the theater, but to get out and explore your community and do some
mm-hmm.
of those things. Maybe it's the Shakespeare in the Park, whatever it is.
Right, right.
And so you also talk about focusing on what's right with me,
mm-hmm.
like you were saying earlier, instead
mm-hmm.
of not what's not working, but what is working. And to, you know, to do you recommend doing the mirror work, as Louise Hayes and others have talked about, you know, how do women shift into loving their bodies?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most women think they're too fat or they're too this, or they don't have the shape that looks like the model in the magazine, and the model's
mm-hmm.
14 years old, but they
right.
don't know that
and
the model's 14 years old. Yeah.
And they don't know
so,
it's been photoshopped either.
Yeah, it's been photoshopped. Yeah.
Right.
Which is an incredible thing in and of itself. But how do you work with women on body image issues?
Well, I ask them to start to identify what it is they love about their body, and it may not be I usually don't start with appearance. I'll say, what do you love that your body can do? So they may love the fact that they can hug their child. They may love the fact that their legs take them, you know, that they can walk long distances. They may love the fact that that they can see and appreciate beauty, or that they can hear and listen to wonderful music, that sort of thing. So you start with the things that are right about your body, that it functions, that it served you well, that it contains, you know, that it's healthy, you know, whatever. But you, again, also kind of going back to this little technique of the EFT, you can also use that to remove a lot of the negative self-talk that you have. I want to go back a second to what you said about affirmations and mirror work. I don't really have my clients do affirmations. I love Louise Hay. I love what she does. But it takes a lot of effort to get affirmations down to the level of the subconscious mind where it really matters. And you know, Louise does recommend that you do your morning affirmations, your evening affirmations, you do them forever. Personally, I'm kind of lazy. And so one of the things that I discovered is that when you pair affirmations with the tapping, that takes those affirmations a lot quicker into the energetic body, into the subconscious mind, and they shift a lot faster. So you're not having to do 20, 30 years of affirmations. You maybe do a couple of weeks or now and then. In fact, an example that I talk about in my presentations is I decided one day just to write down a list of all the things that I thought I would never come to believe. And I, being the geek that I am, I recorded them and burned them onto a CD so I could listen to them in my car. And I decided one day to start tapping along as I was saying, using the EFT tapping, as I was saying each one of these affirmations. And gosh darn, if in a few weeks, I don't even think I did it very much, I believed every single thing that I said. And when I wrote things down, it was like, yeah, right, like I'm never going to believe that. And so that was a profound shift for me. But the astonishing shift that happened was all of those things started to manifest in my life. And the one that usually gets most people's attention is the very first one on the CD, which is large sums of money come to me quickly and easily. And that was the affirmation that opened the door to allow about $70,000 to show up within, I think, about 18 months. This was unexpected money from unusual places.
Clients
so,
for work or just like inheritance or different things like this?
Some of it was an inheritance, which I never expected to get, but that was only about $3,000. Some of it was money that came from a client in a sideline I was working on. He offered me $100,000 to help him out. I was building websites at the time, and by the time we negotiated it, the contract, his wife goes, "I'm not letting you pay her $100,000. How about $50,000?" I'm like, "Okay, $50,000 for 4 hours a week of my time is fine." And then another came literally from a windfall, out of the blue, and it was just happening so regularly that I'd laugh and go, "Well, of course, every time, you know, a check had arrived in the mail, it's like, I don't know how this came here, but it did." So yeah,
that's
some of
fantastic.
It I had worked for, but some of it just showed
exactly. up. Exactly. Well, that is fun. Well, we're going to take a short little break, and we're going to come back. You're listening to Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser, and our guest today is Annette Valancourt, the Elite Soulmate Coach. And she, when we come back after break, we're going to talk more about her spiritual studies, but also her accomplishments with Black Belt and her karate experience, because I think that's very personally empowering. And women can try some new things that might really empower them in some new ways. So we'll be right back. Stay with us.
We're open for business. The Greater Good Ministries Book and Gift Shop is now open for business, featuring metaphysical and uplifting books from your favorite authors, such as Doreen Virtue, Wayne Dyer, Michael Edward Owens. We've added handcrafted one-of-a-kind jewelry, pendants, earrings, and bracelets, and now have an exclusive selection of crystals, rocks, and stones for your metaphysical toolbox. Take a look at our hand-dug Arkansas crystals, imported Brazilian crystals, Tibetan crystals, and Reiki healing stones. All of our rocks, crystals, and stones have been Reiki infused, blessed, and cleared, ready for use. You can reserve your copy of Crystal Healing 2012 and Beyond, Reverend B's new book, A Comprehensive Guide of Rocks, Crystals, and Stones for the New Age. Visit ggmradio.com and click Bookshop in the menu bar. That's ggmradio.com.
Okay, welcome back. I wanted to give a shout out to the Rendezvous Wine Cafe over in O'Fallon on Main Street. They were kind enough to host an event for me last night for Global Mamas, which is a program helping women in Ghana become self-sufficient, economically empowered, and Rendezvous Cafe and Wine Bar, it's owned by a wonderful woman named Stephanie Thompson. She also has a travel agency called Adventure Travel. And I'll tell you what, she definitely has found her soulmate. They travel Europe together. They sit on the beautiful patio and sip on a glass of wine. But they have live entertainment there every weekend, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. They have a banquet room for events. They also do catering, and you can find more out about them at rendezvouscafeandwinebar.com. And I love their little tagline is, "I rendezvous, do you?" And we're talking today about rendezvousing with your soulmate and, you know, preparing yourself for a relationship that is spiritually filled and joyful filled. So welcome back, Annette. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks, Brenda.
Okay. I was trying to play a PSA, which is why there was that little gap in time. I tried to hit the play button, and it stalled out. But I do want to talk about what the PSA was about, because it leads me to a question for you. The PSA was about domestic violence, and there are so many women I know that have gone through either witnessing domestic violence with their parents or experiencing sexual abuse themselves in high school or college, sexual abuse or rape and various things. And you do share in your book a very personal story, which I commend you for that, because I think the more we share our our painful past, the more strength and courage it gives to other people to share theirs. And so many women, when you talk to them, have gone through some type of trauma in that area. What is your advice for women to move beyond that and heal so that they are ready for a mate, a spouse that will treat them with respect and they don't repeat the pattern of an abusive partner?
That's a big question. I think the process starts out with learning that shame is what holds you back, that when you're traumatized by being assaulted physically, sexually, emotionally, that you internalize that as somehow it was your fault and or that you are now damaged goods in some way. I know that's how I felt for years after what happened to me. And it was a long process for me. I wish I would have had EFT back then to shorten the process. But it's beginning to recognize that something happened to you that was outside of your control and that you are still innocent and pure on the inside. I think that was one of the first profound shifts for me is when somebody said to me, this didn't damage the innocent part of you, the pure part of you. This was someone else's sin, to use their word. And that was a big revelation to me. But it can be a long way back because a lot of times we just block aspects of that happening to us, or we think, you know, like I said before, that we're damaged goods and we deserve very little as a result, that we're lucky if we get anybody's attention. And even if they continue to abuse us as we're used to, it's all we think we deserve. So one of the very first steps when I'm working with, and I do work with a lot of women who've been traumatized and have PTSD in my clinical practice, is building a sense of self-esteem, of worthiness that has been so damaged by that kind of physical or sexual violation. And I'll see lots of changes happening once women feel worth saving and worth fighting for.
And so have you worked with any battered women's shelters or any programs that are doing work
when I was
in that population?
Actually, when I was in graduate school, I was on I had an assistantship and was working with a contract with the Department of Children and Family Services for their sexual abuse treatment program. And we were working with the 20 southernmost counties in Illinois. And my job was to help coordinate care and to help provide supervision for the people on the front end, I think they called them homemakers at the time, but they were people who were transporting abused children to treatment and people who were helping the foster parents when children were pulled out of the home and a little bit of treatment. Domestic violence shelters, I think I've done presentations for them, but I haven't been actively involved in, you know, their ongoing programs.
Okay. I just was curious because the PSA was for Safe Connections, and I know several people on their board and involved with them, so we'll have to introduce you to their executive director. They do wonderful work, and just for the listeners, since they didn't hear the PSA, safeconnections.org. Let's talk about your physical conquests here with a black belt in karate. That's just amazing. That's how many years have you been working on that?
Well, I actually don't have a black belt yet. My sensei just informed me a couple weeks ago that I'm going to test for my black belt in a couple of months. My goal was to become a black belt by the time I'm 60. And I started training when I was 54 years old, so that I've been training for 6 years. And it is quite the spiritual practice, as you so astutely intuited. There's physical training involved, but the part that is most fascinating to me is the ability to karate brings all your stuff to the surface too, your fears, your limiting beliefs, that sort of thing. And you need to be able to clear those in order to shift from just doing karate, and this is kind of a recent realization, from doing karate like, oh, I go to my lessons and I practice and that sort of thing, to becoming a warrior, becoming a black belt. So it's a shift from doing to being, and that's true in any kind of manifestation process, including soulmate. People come to my workshops and they'll say, well, what should I do about this, or how do I do this, and whatever. I say, it really isn't about doing, it's about being. And it's the same way with karate. There's a sense of, it's a mindset of being aware, being skilled in your physical being, striving. There's something called the dojo etiquette. There's five different steps in dojo etiquette. One is seek perfection of character. One is refrain from violent behavior. Another one is strive to excel. And these are all good guidelines for life in general, and they underlie the practice of karate. And it really is a humbling practice. If you're very good at other areas of your life, like I'm a very creative person, a very intelligent person, but physically, it's a great challenge for me, and very humbling to realize that my body doesn't do things on easy on command as I can do, you know, with my intellect or my creativity or whatever. So,
well, I really commend you, because you really went out of your comfort zone to do that, because your comfort zone is books and higher knowledge and spiritual things and workshops and all these things. Like, I feel very much aligned with that as well. And then to start this physical path at midlife is definitely so commendable. And so many women could do that at any age, whatever it is. A friend of mine, she's in her early 60s, just started telling me that, you know, she's starting to walk 3 miles a day, and she wants to get back to where she was riding her bike 20 miles a day. And, you know, just talking to her inspired me to think, well, you know what, I need to take my bike down off the shelf, and I need to start biking. But all of us, there is a physical, by doing physical activity, it does open up a new spiritual channel. And when you were talking about being a warrior, I wrote down spiritual warrior. I mean, I see you as a spiritual warrior. Do you see yourself that way?
Yes, I do. In fact, I have a blog called Compassionate Warrior Woman. And,
Compassionate Warrior Woman. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's really about defining for me and from a female aspect what becoming a warrior means. And it has a lot to do with mastering yourself. You know, That's totally what karate is about for me. It's about mastering yourself, not just on a physical plane, but on a mental and a spiritual plane as well.
And so to find your blog, people could Google that, but is there a more direct way to find that blog, Compassionate Woman Warrior?
No. I think it's compassionate-warrior-woman.com, I believe.
Okay.
Morning.
And you have so many social media sites. I do want to give that out to folks. I put on my Facebook page your YouTube clip, but you can go to YouTube and search for Annette's short clip there about her book, How to Manifest Your Soulmate with EFT. You can also go to my facebook.com/alive-to-thrive. I put the link there. And then on Twitter, she's the Love Doctor, but it's spelled D-O-C-T-R. And then she's on LinkedIn under Dr. Annette Valancourt, and that's V-A-I-L-L-A-N-C-O-U-R-T. And then the Facebook page is facebook.com/elitesoulmatecoaching. So please go and like her page and connect with Annette. Send her your questions, your concerns. A lot of people listen to this program in its archived version, and so I'm sure she would be happy to take your questions through her website, elitesoulmatecoach.com. So do you get random questions sometimes, Annette, from your readers
Actually,
that have read
yeah,
your book?
I do. I was thrilled. I had a reader who from the Netherlands who emailed me a question, and so heartwarming to have them, first of all, thank me profusely for writing the book and then post their questions. And so it's a thrill for me to interact with my readers in any fashion. In fact, if you don't mind, I'd like to mention that I'm having a book signing tonight.
I was just going to ask you.
Yeah.
So where's your book signing?
It's going to be at Breath of Life Wellness Center in Richmond Heights on Clayton Road, just off of Brentwood. And we're having a book signing and a demonstration of the EFT tapping method tonight. And also, it's not on my website yet, but I'm going to be joining the EFT radio, online radio show. Starts June the 13th. So I'll be having my own blog talk radio show again. And,
oh, good.
Yeah. And in that, I'm going to be talking about the process of guiding people through the process of the book, interviewing love luminaries, as I like to call them. And also, I'm looking for guests to come on to demonstrate the tapping on a particular area where they feel stuck or blocked from love.
Of course, when you said love luminary, I thought of Sandy Tomey. Are you associated with her, the love luminary?
No.
Sandy Tomey, T-O-M-E-Y. She was a guest on our my program in February, just before Valentine's Day. So June 13th on Blog Talk, Annette Valancourt will have her own show. And what day of the week will that be? And will that be a regular show Friday?
It'll be every other week. Starting June the 13th at 11 a.m. on Fridays.
Okay, so people can listen to your show, 11 a.m. Central, every other Friday, and then tune in to Alive to Thrive.
Right.
There we go. Very good.
Well,
we'll make sure we promote that. And when's your next series of classes?
Excuse me. Right now what I'm planning and putting together for people who go and subscribe to my email list is I'm planning a series of mini classes. And when someone subscribes to my email list, they're going to get a 4-week mini class. But right now I'm in the process of planning and kind of doing all the back-end work for some ongoing virtual classes so that people can have a self-study course and then also have some access to me either through weekly Q&A calls or weekly group coaching calls. So that's in the works right now.
Excellent. And then, are you doing more book signings? Do you want to be in other cities doing book signings?
At this point, I'm in a stage of surrender, which is the final stage in manifesting. And what happens when you're in surrender is opportunities come left and right. I've been contacted by a woman who lives in Orange County, California, and she said, just tell me that, you know, when to pull the trigger, and I'll have you on interviews out here. While I was writing the book, I was on a plane, happened to be sitting next to a woman who used to own a bookstore, and another woman who lives out in Oregon, southern Oregon, and she said, I know 200 women. Come and stay at my house, do a book signing there. So it's funny how magnetic.
It's happening organically.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's happening organically. It's called spiritual marketing. You know, it's when I'm
I love it. Spiritual marketing. That's so good. And those are all great places and definitely mm-hmm. You know, I think it's interesting that, you know, I've lived on, you know, the East Coast and then out in Colorado, and, you know, being in the Midwest is been an interesting journey for the last 9 or 10 years because, but you don't think that there are a lot of people in the Midwest that are exposed to these topics, but then there are. I mean, I have met so many people that are hungry for more spiritual techniques and who have been raised in maybe a traditional religion like Catholicism, like you and I, but now are at the stage in their life where they want more. They want to be inspired by Rumi and Buddhism and read the spiritual masters and see how it all fits together. Have you found that? How have you found your tribe here in the Midwest?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned it about the Midwest, because when I was very young, 18 or so, I was thinking I would have to go to the East Coast or the West Coast to find my tribe, but I got a real strong, clear message that says, no, you are supposed to stay in the Midwest and plant the seed. And so when I moved to St. Louis, the first thing I did is I started a series of meetups, and one of them is St. Louis Spiritual Singles. And instantly people were starting to come, and I would have people over to my house, and we would talk about these topics, and we would watch films and read books and have deep discussions. And when I would grow tired, because I'm an introvert and need, a lot of quiet time, inevitably someone would say, thank you, Annette, for having these kind of gatherings. They mean so much to us, and we don't have many places to talk about that. So I just sort of opened my home, literally, which I'd never done before, to these kind of gatherings, and people just started showing up.
That's awesome.
Wow.
And so for people that don't know, meetup.com is a fantastic place where you can start your own special interest group on any topic. I've joined very diverse groups vintage fashion enthusiasts, because I'm getting into vintage jewelry and having that as another line within our jewelry business. But I've also had an Alive to Thrive marketing meetup. So you can have a meetup on any topic that interests you. And I know a woman who is a single, 50-plus years old, she's a single mom, and she goes on hikes, three or four hikes a week with various hiking groups. So meetup is a great way to connect with others and possibly find your soulmate, because they will be doing the same thing you love. So thank you so much, Annette. Any closing thoughts or closing quotes that you'd like to end with?
Let's see. I'm sure I have a wonderful closing quote somewhere here. Let me just see if I can pull something up.
I like the one you have from Rumi on a lot of places that you have your bio and things. Your task is not to seek for love.
Oh, that's the one I was looking for. Do you have it?
Oh, okay. Your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers you have built against it. And I love that, because it's rather than pursuing the butterfly, then the butterfly is always going to be elusive. It's just to really find the barriers you have within and start working on yourself. No time like the present to begin that work, and that, maybe working with a coach, someone like Annette, that could help you get started to starting to uncover and remove some of the hurtful things from your past, let it go finally, stop carrying it around, and learn the EFT technique that can help you on your spiritual journey. So thank you so much. It's been really wonderful having you on. The hour went very quickly.
It did. It's great talking to you, Brenda. Thank you.
Great talking with Annette Valancourt. Look for her show on Blog Talk. It'll be starting Friday, June 13th at 11 a.m. Here on Blog Talk Radio. And we'll be back next week, June 6th. We have a lot of great guests coming in June. So thank you for joining us each week. We're going to end with Huey Lewis.